Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back studying the Torah portions. This week, we're looking at the portion Vayigash, which is Genesis 44:18 through 47:27. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video right now, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
Vayigash tells how Joseph reveals his identity to his brothers and is restored to his father, Israel. Using his power in Egypt, Joseph delivers his people from the famine and settles them in Egypt, in the land of Goshen.
So this portion begins leaving off where the last chapter had given us a cliffhanger, where Joseph, who's currently still concealing his identity from his brothers, has framed his youngest brother Benjamin for theft. At that point, Joseph then demanded that Benjamin become his slave as payment for the theft. So where this portion then starts is with Judah making a passionate plea to Joseph, asking him to spare Benjamin and take him instead, take Judah instead.
Judah's argument to appeal to Joseph is basically saying, my father is old, and out of all of his sons, the one he loves the most is Benjamin. And he wasn't even willing to let Benjamin go at first to Egypt. So Judah is saying, I'm worried since Jacob loves Benjamin so much. When we come back, and Jacob sees that Benjamin is gone, that
he might just die from the grief of it all.
So Judah basically is saying, my brother Benjamin is more important than me for his sake, for the sake of my father. So take me instead. I'm giving myself in Benjamin's place. I'm willing to be a prisoner and a slave so that Benjamin can go free for the sake of my father.
This really shows it basically completes the character arc of Judah, where when we first interact with Judah, he's leading his brothers to sell Joseph into slavery. He's acting based on jealousy, based on hatred, and he's being very fleshly and self-centered. He goes through some other really bad stuff that makes him start to question himself and realize he's been acting unrighteously, and then he starts to exhibit regret for what he did to Joseph, and now he's exhibiting self-sacrifice and love. He's putting Benjamin and he's putting Israel above himself. He's saying, I don't care what happens to me. I'm willing to lay down what I have, my freedom. I'm willing to lay it down for the sake of Benjamin and for the sake of my father.
Previously with Joseph, Judah and his brothers hated Joseph because he was the most loved. The fact that Israel preferred Joseph to the other sons filled them with jealousy and hate and caused them to
sell him into slavery.
Exactly. But now, Judah is faced with the same situation. There's one son of Israel that he loves more than all the others. But rather than being filled with hatred and jealousy and seizing the opportunity to get Benjamin out of the picture, like he had done before, now he's actively fighting to save Benjamin because he knows his father loves Benjamin.
And so at this point, with this realization, Joseph essentially, he breaks down. He tells all of his Egyptian servants to get out of the room, such as just Joseph and his brothers. And at this point, Joseph finally reveals, it's me, Joseph. And so his brothers, they're shocked. They can't say anything. And so he says again, I'm your brother, Joseph. And he says, do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. So as Joseph has now seen that his brothers have had a change of heart, that they've regretted what they've done, and they're willing to be selfless and show love, now he's saying, don't be upset with yourselves because God used this whole situation to put me here in Egypt, to put me in charge, to store up everything that we needed for the famine, to preserve our family.
Joseph was sent to deliver his people, in this case, from the famine. Even though his brothers had intended him harm, Joseph is saying, God sent me. So don't be distressed or angry with yourselves that you sold me here. He says, it was not you who sent me, but God. And so he's really telling them not to beat themselves up about it and not to blame themselves, because what's come of it is good, because God planned it that way.
Yeah. And this whole story has very strong messianic themes in it, because you have Joseph, he hadn't done anything wrong, but his brothers, his own relatives, put him through suffering, through which he is then raised up high so he can save his whole family and people from all the nations of the earth. The Master Yeshua was put to death largely at the behest of his own Jewish relatives. And he was put to death, but then he was raised up. Now he sits at the right hand of the Father, and everyone can come to him and be saved. And it reminded me of in Zechariah 12:10, when it says that the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem will look on him whom they have pierced and will mourn for him. Joseph was just revealed to his brothers who sold him into slavery. And Joseph is having to tell them, don't grieve. And at the same time, it also reminds me, in Isaiah 53:10, it says that the Lord was pleased to crush him. So even though it was Jews and Romans helped out, but even though they did have Yeshua crucified, it was God who was doing this. God was the one who sent Yeshua to suffer and die for the salvation of the whole world, including his Jewish people.
In the same way that Joseph is telling his brothers, even though you hated me and intended harm against me, don't be distressed. And he's telling them, this isn't your fault. In the same way, even though the Jews, Yeshua's people, were participating in his death, Yeshua came to deliver them. It reminds me of some things that Peter said to his fellow Jews after Yeshua had risen. He says, you killed the prince of the life, whom God raised out of the dead, of which we are witnesses. And now, brothers, I have known that you did it through ignorance. And what things God had announced beforehand through the mouth of all the prophets, that his Messiah should suffer, he fulfilled this way. Reform, therefore, and return for the blotting out of your sins, so that times of refreshing may come from the presence of Adonai, and he may send the one who has been appointed to you, Messiah Yeshua. You are the sons of the prophets and of the covenant that God made to your fathers. God, having raised up his servant, sent him to you first, blessing you in the turning away of each one from your evil ways. So, like Joseph's brothers, they hated the one sent for them, and they tried to harm him.
At first, they actually intended they did to kill him.
Yeah, but it says that God sent Yeshua. God wanted to fulfill what he had spoken beforehand and deliver these people. So, like the brothers of Joseph, when they reform and realize what they've done wrong, they don't need to tremble anymore or be distressed or angry.
They just need to reform and accept Yeshua.
Because
accept the salvation that he's offering.
Because he is their deliverer, that even through their hate of him, God had sent to them for their deliverance. And so now that Joseph is revealed to his brothers and he tells them, I was sent for your deliverance, don't be afraid. Then he says, I'm going to take care of you. And he tells them, go back, get Jacob, get all your belongings and all your households, bring them all here. I want you guys to settle in the land of Goshen in Egypt.
And Goshen is seemingly like one of the best, most fertile places in Egypt.
And so Joseph loads up all these gifts and animals and food and
wagons
wagons of stuff, and sends them all with his brothers.
With Pharaoh's permission. Pharaoh specifically, he hears about this and he's like, oh yeah, send him a bunch of stuff. I want to see Jacob.
So they send it all to Jacob, and Joseph's brothers give the report to their father, saying, Joseph is alive. And more than that, he's in charge of all of Egypt. And he wants us to come.
And at first Israel's like, no way. He does not believe that. But then they say, look at all this stuff he sent with us. And then Jacob says, it is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I will go see him before I die.
I thought even this has another layer of messianic theme that I noticed, which is basically Jacob is receiving a report of good news that the one that he thought was dead
is alive.
Is alive. It's as if he's back from the dead.
I mean, Jacob has been mourning Joseph for the last, like, 22 years.
Right about, yeah.
He thought for sure that Joseph was dead. And now he receives him back alive.
And so with this message of good news, the one you thought was dead was alive. He now says, come follow me. Come to where I am, where blessings and deliverance await.
And life.
And life.
I'll give you life. Come to me and I'll give you life and I'll save you.
Joseph has so many.
And I think this just again, I've said this multiple times, but Yeshua says Moses wrote about me. And sometimes it's hard to see, but once you've seen Yeshua and you look back, you see the messianic foreshadowing that's here. Even in the beginning, in Genesis, you already see shadows and patterns of the Messiah. And it points to Yeshua. And it's really amazing to see.
And it can serve as a witness. Just as all the presents that Joseph sent were a witness. These words God wrote in his book to give a picture of what a deliverer for Israel looks like. These come as a witness of Yeshua as being Messiah. And so we should all be encouraged to do what Israel did when we see the sign say, it is enough.
So after Jacob hears Joseph is alive, we're going to go to Egypt and live with him. He picks up everything that he has and they all move out and they head toward Egypt. And on their way out, they stop at Beersheba, which is right near the southern border of Canaan. So stopping right before he leaves the promised land, and he gives a sacrifice to the God of his father, Isaac. So again, this is just showing like Israel's thankfulness and basically seeing the faithfulness of God and giving back to him. We've already seen God gives something to Jacob. He's like, I want it. He makes it two-way. He gives back. And so here he's sacrificing to God. And then God appears to Israel in a vision. Just like when he first left Canaan to flee from his brother Esau, and God appeared to him in the vision, gave him the vision of the ladder, and says, I will be with you no matter where you go, but I will bring you back to this land. Here, God says, I am the God of your father. Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt, because I will make you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again. So, again, this is God promising, even though you're leaving the promised land, I will be with you, and I will bring you back. Because even though Jacob goes down into the land of Egypt, we'll see later that he'll be buried back in the land of Canaan. That will be his final resting place. So, it's just a really good way of bookending everything, just showing all the way up until the end, God is still with Jacob everywhere he goes, and he's still fulfilling the promises, remembering the promises, and he's making Jacob that great nation that he promised all the way back to Abraham hundreds of years ago.
What God is saying to Jacob now is in fulfillment of what he had said to Abraham way back in Genesis 15, when he had said, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs. And afterward, they shall come out with great possessions. So God is now saying to Jacob, this is a land that's not yours that you're going to go down, but you're going to come back up as a great nation. Just as he told Abraham, you're going to come up with many possessions. They're going in much smaller than they're going to come out.
Yeah.
Because they're going to come out as the great nation that was promised. And God is telling Jacob that what's been being waited for since before you were born, is going to be fulfilled through you in the land you are headed right now.
Yeah.
I'm about to make it come true.
Basically, that promise I made to Abraham, I've been working to fulfill it. I've been slowly doing it. But everything's laid. We're starting that promise now. I've chosen Abraham. I've chosen Isaac. I've chosen Jacob. I've chosen your 12 sons. Now you're going to that land where you're going to sojourn. You are going to be a nation now. So once God's appeared to Jacob and again promises faithfulness, Jacob and his whole household, 70 people in all, end up coming down to Egypt. So Israel and the rest of his sons, led by Judah, go to Goshen, and Joseph meets them there. And finally, after 20-something years, Israel sees his beloved son Joseph alive and well. And so Israel falls on Joseph's neck and starts weeping for a long time. They're embracing. It's a really emotional moment. He's been living with this loss for so much of his life. And now finally, he has this immense joy of seeing his son Joseph alive again.
We've seen several times Israel's been saying, I'm going to die in grief. Just let me die in mourning. Mm-mm. Let me go down to the grave. I just want to die. Ever since he lost Joseph.
Yeah, he's been having that depression there.
It's been a constant mournful, just waiting for death to come. Mm. But now, when he finally sees Joseph and is reunited with him, he says, now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive. This is very different. Even though he's still saying, I'm ready to die. He's now saying, I'm ready to die. Mm.
I might as well just be dead. It's now.
Now, instead of feeling like his life is ruined and over and there's no more hope, now.
His life is complete.
Yes, his life is complete. Now he has the relief and peace. Mm. The peace with which Abraham and Isaac were buried. Now he's ready to have that peace. Mm. So there's nothing more for him to do. So now that Joseph is finally reunited with his family, he wants to settle them in the land of Goshen. Mm. But before he can do that, he has to get Pharaoh's approval.
Right. Because even though he is like the most powerful in practicality, Pharaoh has the final say of everything.
And Pharaoh's already said
how much he wants to see Jacob and the rest of the family.
Right. So he's already shown he's favorable to the idea.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a formality, but Joseph is still like, let's do this right in the way we approach him. Mm-hmm. So after Joseph goes in and talks to Pharaoh and says, I want to put them in Goshen, then Pharaoh briefly talks to some of the other sons of Israel and afterwards says to Joseph, hey, it's your father and your brothers. Let them settle wherever they want. So if you want them in the best of the land in Goshen, go right ahead.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to note, I feel like there's yet another messianic parallel here with Joseph, which is a little different. It's instead of being a deliverer here, he's being a sort of intermediary, an intercessor.
Okay.
Joseph's family would just be some strangers from Canaan to Pharaoh, if not for Joseph. But because Joseph stands in between them, and because Pharaoh respects Joseph, when Joseph appeals to Pharaoh on behalf of his brothers,
then he's much more open to the appeal of the brothers themselves.
Right.
Okay.
And so in the same way, Yeshua stands between God and us. Yeshua became a firstborn brother to us. And so in that same way, he's interceding to God on behalf of his brothers so that we can come into his land.
Into the presence of the king.
Yeah. Into the presence of the king.
That's really good. So then once Joseph has gotten approval to settle his family in Goshen, Joseph then presents his father, Jacob, to Pharaoh. And the first thing that Jacob does is bless Pharaoh. So I just found that interesting because his whole life, Jacob has been wrestling for blessings from his father and from God. And now, toward the end of his life, he's blessing others. So I just I just found that really interesting. But then Pharaoh asks Jacob, how many years have you lived? And Jacob says, the years of my sojourning are 130. Few and unpleasant have been the years of my life, nor have they attained to the years that my fathers lived during the days of their sojourning. So he says that 130 years is few, which, I mean, both of his forefathers, Isaac and Abraham, lived longer than that by decades. So comparatively, it is short. But I also wanted to dwell on the unpleasantness that he says that his years were characterized by, because from the beginning, he had struggle with his twin brother Esau. He was constantly wrestling, trying to outpace Esau. And then when he finally got the birthright and the blessing, his brother wanted to kill him and he had to flee his homeland. And then when he was sojourning out of his homeland, he had to constantly wrestle with his uncle Laban, trying to get the wages he was owed, get the wife he wanted, get everything. He had to work really hard for that. And then on his way back to the promised land, he had to wrestle with God himself. He walked away with a limp. And then when he's settled in the land, he ends up losing his beloved son. So comparatively to the lives of Abraham and Isaac, Jacob has by far had it the hardest. And God has been with him the whole way. And so at the end of it all, he ends up standing before Pharaoh, the mightiest king on the earth at this point. And he's the one blessing Pharaoh. He blesses him twice, once when he enters and once when he leaves. So it just shows how God was with Israel through all the hardship, through all the pain. That was his promise when at Bethel. I will be with you wherever you go. You may go through a lot of hardship in your life. It may be awful. Stuff may be taken away from you. Relationships may be broken. Sorrow may be brought to you. But God will be with you no matter what. And you can trust in that because he will be faithful. Don't ever lose faith in God. He will be with you.
So, while all this has been going on with Joseph and his brothers and his father all getting together, all these gifts, and everyone's so happy to see each other, We almost forget that it's the middle of one of the worst famines anyone's ever seen. And so for all the rest of the land of Egypt, everyone, it says they languished by reason of the famine. Mm. And we've already read before that Joseph was the only one who had food because
he had stored it up during the years of plenty.
So everyone's going to Joseph for food. But eventually, everyone runs out of money because the famine goes on for so long. They say to Joseph, we're out of money, but we need food or we'll die. Please don't let us die. What can we do? And Joseph says, instead of paying with money, you can pay with your herds. So everyone sells their flocks and their herds and all their animals and gives them to Joseph, and Joseph gives them to Pharaoh.
And then the next year,
they're out of animals, and the famine is still going, and they're still hungry. And so they go to Joseph, and they say, we're going to die. We have nothing left to give you except the land we live on and our own bodies. But please don't let us die. So Joseph says, all right, if all you have left is your land and yourselves, then give them to Pharaoh, and I'll give you food. So the people, all the people of Egypt, become slaves of Pharaoh. And all the land of Egypt comes under Pharaoh's direct ownership. No one is a free man in all of Egypt except the priests. Everyone else submits themselves fully to Pharaoh. They're obligated to give him a fifth of all of their harvests. Joseph brokers this deal. I will feed all of you, and in exchange, you have nothing of yourself. Everything you have, everything you are, belongs to Pharaoh from now on.
And so when this happens, the people all say, you have saved our lives. Let us find favor in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's slaves. So they aren't upset about being slaves. They are thankful that their lives are saved. That's what they're going into this slavery with. What Joseph laid on them wasn't cruel. That nothing here is evil that Joseph is doing to these people, he's actually saving them. And this reminded me of another aspect of what Yeshua says to us. When he says that we are his slaves, he says his yoke is easy and his burden is light. But at the same time, we are still actually Yeshua's slaves. In Luke 14, Yeshua says to his disciples who want to follow him that they need to count the cost, because anyone who is not willing to give up everything that he himself has is not able to be his disciple. So Yeshua is offering life to everybody. He paid for it. He was the one who secured that life for us. We don't earn that. But at the same time, in order to follow him, in order to gain that eternal life, we need to count all as loss so that we may gain the Messiah. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20, "You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. So then, glorify God in your body." Yeshua, by giving himself as a sacrifice, bought us. Just like how Joseph essentially bought the people of Egypt by giving them the food, Yeshua bought us with his blood. So, like the people of Egypt, we shouldn't look at that as begrudgingly doing what he says. We should look at that as, thank you for saving our lives. We owe this to you. We owe you everything. Without you, we would be dead. So our lives belong to you.
So while all the people of Egypt are being sold to Pharaoh to escape the famine, and so they come out of it with basically their lives and nothing else, It says that Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and they gained possessions in it, and were fruitful and multiplied greatly. So God is showing his favor to Israel, even in the land of their sojourning. He's showing, you're blessed more than the people you're sojourning with. I'm still with you, even though you're not in the promised land. You're gaining possessions. You're multiplying. I'm fulfilling that promise I made that you're going to come out of there a great nation. So, big takeaway, have patience and hope for the future. Jacob spent his whole life hoping for the future, especially after Joseph was
presumably dead.
He thought all was lost. And Joseph too, he was lost in slavery and prison. But after all those years of waiting, they were reunited. They achieved the desire of their hearts, more or less. That same thing awaits us if we persevere to the end. We have a hope of something better. No matter what befalls us in the few and unpleasant years we have on this earth, there is hope in the future, and we should strive for that and wait for that. We should know that Messiah has saved our lives and we belong to him, and that he is interceding for us, so we know that we can go to the best land, better than anything on this earth, if we just keep persevering.
That wraps up the portion of Vayigash. Next week, we'll be looking at the portion of Vayechi, so be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit that notification bell to keep updated on new episodes. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.